I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and joining us in the shop, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Eugene Robinson. He's a columnist at The Washington Post. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey,
man.
Doing
fine.
ER, what's up, man? Welcome to the shop. Your first time in, really?
Thanks. Yeah, I want a little bit off the top and pretty close on the sides.
We got you.
It's a little late for that, brother.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's cold in the barbershop.
Nothing but street racing.
I thought we were talking about the Peace Prize, yo.
I was going to say, I love Gene Robinson, but I don't remember an afro on top of that dome. I just don't. I love Gene.
This is that kind of barbershop. Okay.
Well, in other ironic news, President Obama was in Norway yesterday to accept his Nobel Prize for Peace. He accepts this award just a little more than a week after committing 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan. Really? Michelle, did President Obama say anything in his acceptance speech to restore some of his political clout back home?
Well, I'll let you guys decide that. He did acknowledge what you talked about, Jimmy. For example, I mean, it was obviously a 30-minute speech. We can't play all of it. We certainly have a link to it on our site. Let me just play a short clip for people who missed it, where he talks about exactly the issue you raised. Here it is.
We are at war. I'm responsible for the deployment of thousands of young Americans to battle in a distant land. Some will kill, and some will be killed. And so I come here with an acute sense of the costs of armed conflict, filled with difficult questions about the relationship between war and peace, and our effort to replace one with the other.
That gives you the sense of it. It was a very serious speech. It was a very serious speech. Gene, I know you. What did you think? You're also a veteran foreign correspondent for people who don't know.
Yeah, I still have questions about the policy in Afghanistan, but I thought it was a terrific speech as a piece of rhetoric. He gave this huge broad sweep of the history of warfare, and he went through what must have been his thinking process as he decided on the escalation that he ordered last week of 30,000 extra troops and the policy going forward. So I thought it was very well delivered, and it's getting him a lot of props back home from erstwhile opponents of everything he stood for, like Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin, and the conservatives are very happy with what they heard. This vigorous defense of America's role in the world.
Jimmy, do you mind if I ask Arsalan? Because I think you were not so pleased. I remember, I remember that particularly after the president's speech about Afghanistan, you said, you know, where's my anti-war president?
Yeah, you know, President Barack Obama, you know, has famously said that I'm not against every war, I'm just against dumb wars. And, you know, it's interesting to note that, you know, he didn't mention, you know, the debacle in Iraq. You know, we went in looking for weapons of mass destruction and we couldn't find a wiffle ball bat. And so, you know, for me, his speech in Oslo seemed like a, you know, philosophical lecture on Sun Tzu's The Art of War. And, you know, he laid out his paradigm of what constitutes a just war. And, you know, a political headline the day after, you know, in big letters said conservatives praise Obama because essentially he put forward that sort of Pax Americana, you know, military might makes right sort of a doctrine. And, you know, sadly, he, you know, many in his Democratic base, myself included, you know, felt as though our president, especially in terms of foreign policy thus far, has pretty much, you know, abandoned his Democratic base.
All right, Ruben, now, you know, don't tase me, bro. But here's me. Here's me. I'm wondering if he should have begged off the award. You know, I mean, there's precedence for that. Yes. You know, I mean, Lay Duck Toe in 1973, he won with Kissinger, you know, for the Paris Peace Accord. But he said, you know what? That's ridiculous because there's still war in Vietnam. So I'm gonna back up off, bro. I'm wondering if Obama just should have said, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks.
For two reasons. I think if he had done that, he would have gotten enormous political benefit from that for two reasons. One is,
absolutely,
as Arsalan just laid out, I mean, you are a war president now. And this paradox of being a war president who goes and gets the Nobel Peace Prize is hard for a lot of folks to avoid parroting, right? So there's right. there's that. And then also the fact that even he acknowledges, obviously, that he had not done enough to deserve this award. And he made light of that and joked about it and said, after I heard the introduction, I almost believed for a second I deserved it. So I think there could have been enormous political benefit. But it's done. It's done. He accepted it. I think both Gene and Arsalan make very important points. And I think that Gene's right that as a piece of rhetoric, like all of Obama's speeches, this was very well done and very well delivered. But the problem, I think, with folks in the Obama camp is they're only going to be successful if you root for Barack Obama, if voters disconnect the man and his policies from his words. If you take him literally at his words and the words he speaks, then you're going to have the problem that Arsalan alluded to, which is all the liberal base out there is taking his words literally, and maybe that's not wrong, and they're saying, oh, my goodness, what happened to my president? He's gone to the right. He's become a war president.
Or,
for me, the cringe moment was when he praised Ronald Reagan. He praised Ronald Reagan. Yeah.
Wait, hold up. So you have praised Ronald Reagan.
Really?
Yeah,
thing one, you have praised Ronald Reagan. Thing two, you support his policy in Afghanistan.
Well, no.
Thing three, is it the real issue that liberals have projected their values and beliefs onto him when he never held them to begin with?
Exactly.
He's never been aggressive.
Let me go to that last
point. Go ahead. What he said.
The last point is, I'm sorry, Gene, the last point about projecting onto the liberals projected onto him because he allowed them to do so because he's a blank slate. He said, I want your votes. There's enough. If you are a liberal who's anti-war, you could point to various Obama speeches during the campaign that would say, this is how I got to the impression that this guy was anti-war. So I think he does have a problem now with his liberal base, because when you do things like praise Reagan for reaching out to the Soviets, you know, the last generation of baby boomers scratching their heads saying, wait a minute, you know, I don't remember it that way.
Well, and let's not forget also that, you know, when conservatives are praising Barack Obama, that just, I mean, these are people who are not going to vote for him in a million years. You know, let's not forget that Ronald McDonald could run for, you know, Republican president. And he may.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Doesn't everybody project onto political leaders?
Of course,
celebrities.
I mean,
isn't that what they do? I mean, can you really avoid it?
Go ahead, Eugene. Go ahead, speak your piece.
No, we do project on him, and I think if we had listened to what he said about the use of force, for example, about war from the very beginning, it's been fairly consistent, actually. It just was not hard for him to get to the left of Hillary Clinton during the Democratic primaries. And I mean, that was easy for him.
I mean, I just remember how distressed some people were when he stood up for Professor Henry Louis Gates after the whole thing with that whole thing in Cambridge where Gates was arrested in his own house for allegedly breaking into his own house. And some people were shocked, you know, that he was governing while black, that he actually picked up his head and said, you know, actually, I know a lot about this. I worked in Chicago. B, I'm a young black man myself. C, constitutional law professor. I know about this. People are like, oh, my God, how can he talk about this? Oh, my God. And now it just seems to me that people – and he actually talked about this on Letterman when he said, you know, actually, I was black before I became president. So why are people now shocked? You know what I mean? I don't know that you can avoid as a political leader. I see this with women, for example, with women leaders. People are shocked when they're not huggy-feely, touchy, nurturing, and they govern in a different way. People are shocked. Like, why aren't you mommy? I don't know.
There's just one more point on this is that I do believe there is a point sometimes when any new president becomes enamored of the generals and they're inside the security loop. They listen to what the generals are saying. And what I hope is that this is not the product of an infatuation or an extraordinary infatuation with the idea that military force can solve more problems than it really can.
Jeez Louise, ironies abound. This just in, Mike Tyson nominated for Poet Laureate. So
Stop.
So only in America, right? Well, check this out. You know, five American men from Washington, D.C. area, you know, when they were arrested on Wednesday in Pakistan, they had allegedly been in contact with extremist jihadist groups with links to Al-Qaeda. Or was that Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda, I don't know. This is a very complicated story, and we don't have enough time to really give it justice. We talked about this earlier in the program. But Arsalan, because what I was struck by is the fact that the families of these young men went to CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, for which you formerly worked, and then that kind of put in motion part of the investigation. I'm just interested briefly in your take on that.
Well, I think the only silver lining that I got from this case thus far is the fact that community policing does work, and especially here in the United States. So, you know, here you had five different families of five different ethnically diverse backgrounds who, you know, saw that their kids were missing. They immediately went to their local mosques and local civil rights organizations who directly that same day got them in touch with the FBI. We found out that these five kids were arrested in Sargodha, Pakistan, which is about 90 miles from Lahore and between Islamabad and Lahore, and essentially are now being held by Pakistani officials and being interviewed by jointly by the FBI and these Pakistani officials. What's interesting is that you know, a famous Muslim de-radicalizer here in the United States is saying that it seems like these kids are sort of falling into this trap of what's known as "quote unquote" the new jihadi cool, which is sort of like the wannabe gangbangers.
Great, yeah, good. We need that.
They have, what did you call that? Anti-radicalizer?
De-radicalizer.
They have those.
There are professional de-radicalizers here that are trying to sort of get into the pathology of what these potential extremists might be going through.
Forgive me for jumping in, just because I want to save time for the other thing I know you all want to talk about. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Arsalan Iftikhar, Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, and Gene Robinson. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. For the Tiger Woods hit list keeps on growing. Now, if you're keeping count, I think we're up to 13. And yes, that includes a couple of cocktail waitresses, club promoters, and yes, even two porn stars. Wow, chicka, wow, wow. But you know what?
And allegedly some hookers on the side. You just don't have time. Not enough hours in the day.
You know, I have no idea what he's even talking about.
The one thing they all have in common. Hold on a second. The one thing they all have in common, they're white. What's up with that? As if it matters.
Ouch.
Michelle?
Well, you know, Gene wrote a column about this. I'm going to ask him to sort of weigh on this. And you know what? Well, I noticed, Gene, you had like 600 comments by lunchtime.
Yeah, I know.
So this actually hit a nerve. So what I actually wrote,
and I'm not going to deny and be disingenuous and say that race wasn't in it, but I wrote, why are they all Barbie? And so it's not just that they're all white. They're all a specific type. The whole Barbie thing.
Let me just read what you said. No offense to anyone who actually looks like Barbie, but it really is striking how much the women who've been linked to Woods resemble one another. I'm talking about the long hair, the specific body type, even the facial features. Mattel could sue for trademark infringement. Oh, and well, you also went on to say that his aim wasn't variety, but some kind of validation.
Yeah.
Eugene. I think you got that wrong, bro. I think those kind of, you know, plantation presumptions, just they're sexy, but they don't work anymore. I mean, so what? You mean because he has a type? You know, did this somehow gives us some look into his psyche? I don't get that.
Well, I don't have a microscope to look inside his mind, but I think maybe it does, and I think maybe it tells it because this specific kind of Barbie Hugh Hefner popularized.
So he's got a type, right?
Well, he's got a type, but man, I mean, that's
does the, it stand you know out what? More because he's more or less African-American. And I say that because he doesn't describe himself that way. I mean, I would say he was African-American, but he has this made-up term that he uses. So does it stand out? I mean, if he were white and he favored a particular type of person, would we notice? Would we even notice? I mean, if he were any other big time athlete,
if he were white and he only slept with black women, I think we would notice that.
Rob De Niro.
Yeah,
Do we care?
We notice.
We don't care. It doesn't say anything about Rob De Niro. It doesn't say anything about the women that he slept with. Chris Rock allegedly had an affair.
You know who else doesn't say anything? Jimmy, you know who else doesn't say anything about?
All right. Chris Rock allegedly had several affairs with two white women.
Two isn't several, dear.
Exactly.
Three is
well, two is more
see,
than
here,
one.
Okay. Here, what we have here is a data set, okay? This is not like one, you know, one affair, and it's not like it's separated by years or whatever. This is kind of, you know, I'm done with golf for the day. I'm going to hunt for Barbie, you know, and I just think that's interesting that this is a very approved kind of almost sanctioned desirable object in our society.
Or the other piece of it is that where Tiger hangs out in the circles where he rolls, there aren't a lot of sisters. So that could be the other piece, right?
Reuben, what do you want to say?
Well, I think the I take Gene's point because there's a difference between what Gene is saying about the Barbie stereotype, the Barbie prototype, and what I heard Michael Eric Dyson say, sociology professor at Georgetown, who I think it's safe to say sees everything through a black and white lens. And he said basically, brilliant though Mike Dyson is, he said, you know, he went further and he did make it a race thing. He said this somehow relates to Tiger's sense of himself, you know, of himself, that because Tiger doesn't see himself as a real black man, you know, authentically black, that it's easier for him to, and as if to say only, you know, only real black men go out and when they have affairs, they cheat with other black women, you know.
And that's a real
problem.
Reality,
the real lesson is real men don't cheat at all. So
right.
I think that's mistaken.
Well,
I think that's mistaken.
Marcelin.
I also don't think that black, to be fair here, if you've gotten a look at these women, okay, that there you put a brain in that head and you got a real special girl there. I mean, there is not a lot here. And you do not want black women, I think, have more self-respect, at least the women I know and I've known for many, many years, than to want to be included in that brothel.
To want to be included in that group.
And so this notion that they want to get into that. This isn't the Yale Club you're trying to break into.
True, that's true.
You know,
Marcelin, really fast.
Yeah, I mean, springboarding off what Reuben said, I think this is, again, another cautionary tale against infidelity. To all married men out there, please, please, please keep your Tiger Woods in your pants.
No, seriously.
After the July 4th.
But they're not going to.
I know.
The little tiger.
Well, you know, on the 4th of July, you know, we all remember the murder suicide of former Tennessee Titan quarterback Steve McNair. I mean, there are good men out there who don't cheat. And, you know, unfortunately, I think we're becoming desensitized as a nation to the concept of infidelity, whether it comes from a man or a woman. You know, infidelity as a paradigm is just wrong.
I don't know if we're insensitive to it. We seem to be talking about it a lot.
Desensitized.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think we have become.
Wow. Well, anyway, okay. Kind of my head is spinning here. Well, thank you.
Next week's guest is John Edwards. Be sure to tune in.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. He's also a presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist. He writes for CNN.com and the San Diego Union Tribune. He joined us from San Diego. Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuide.com and a civil rights attorney. And Eugene Robinson is a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for The Washington Post. They were kind enough to join us from our Washington, D.C. studios. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. I'll be back.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.